Welcome to the Herd Health Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on the dairy and beef cattle industry in Canada. With information shared from our technical services veterinarian team, we aim to bring producers, ranchers, and veterinarians relevant insights on trends, management practices, and science that can be applied in the field. This podcast is brought to you by the cattle team at Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health Canada, a leader in the animal health industry. You can find episodes of our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thank you for listening. Welcome back to the Herd Health Podcast. This is Heather Hargrave. I'm a brand manager with the Boehringer Ingelheim Cattle Team, and I am back here today with Dr. Phil Meadows, who is a tech service vet on our cattle team. Welcome back, Phil.
Thank you, Heather.
And we've spent a couple of the previous episodes talking about the importance of the dry period for cattle, and we also talked about our latest innovation, Bovacalc Dry, so we encourage you to go back up and listen to those episodes. In this episode in particular, we're going to focus on managing those cows during the dry period so that we can set them up for success as they head into their next lactation. So I guess to start off, Phil, at a very high level, what are the things that we can do as from both the practitioner standpoint, but maybe also from the producer standpoint as well, to set those cows up for success for the next lactation?
Yes, Heather, there's several things that go into a successful dry period. And we know very easily when things aren't done the way that the industry standards are, that we measure that in the fresh cow as less milk production and health challenges. So the reason we want to do certain things during the dry period is so that we can have them calve in very easily, no health problems, no diseases, and then be able to get to that peak lactation at a reasonable amount of time in the next lactation so that we maximize milk production for them.
Perfect, because it is all about that milk production once we get into that lactation stage.
That's right.
Okay, so you and I've talked off microphone about various strategies that could be used during the dry period. One of those is from a nutrition standpoint. So what role does nutrition play ensuring that the cow transitions smoothly from dry off to freshening?
Yes, there's been a tremendous amount of research gone into how we adjust things in the dry period nutrition-wise so that we set the cow up for success as a fresh cow. James Drakely was probably one of the more famous individuals that has conducted a lot of this research quite a long time ago now. And so we actually, as an industry, changed our thoughts and what our expectations are from a dry matter intake standpoint leading into the next calving. For a long time, there was the dogma was that a cow will always reduce dry matter intake for the last week or two before she calves, and that was just a given by the industry. And until Dr. Drakely and others uncovered ways that we can adjust the ration and promote dry matter intake even very close up to that calving day. So in short, how we deliver the feed, the formulation of the ration is a very important piece to setting that cow up for success in the next lactation.
And then obviously as she goes into lactation, there's going to be more need from a nutrition standpoint with specific for calcium. Is there strategies or different ways that calcium can be managed leading into that lactation period as well while they're in dry off?
Yes, that disease milk fever has been a very common disease in fresh cows or cows at calving for many years, for many decades. And it that with some recent, not recent, but in the last 20 years, we understand that by adjusting what ingredients are included in the dry ration, we can really change the prevalence or how often we see milk fever in dairy herds. So it's something called a DCAD diet. So that's just a way to adjust the various ingredients in the ration to make it a more negatively charged ration. And it's a complicated process, but in short, it's a way to adjust how the cow's kidneys work and their digestive tract works so that they are able to start mobilizing calcium on their own leading up to that calving period. There's also some other things that have been done. I'd mentioned the, you know, James Drakely and his changes to the dry cow diet. That in and of itself has been a game changer, I think, in the industry, in my opinion, in the industry in the last 30 years from a cow health and productivity standpoint in the fresh cow. What James and others have created then is a diet that is much lower in energy. So we call it controlled energy diets. And in that way, there's usually the straw is a component of the ration. It's a main component of the ration during the dry period. And it has enough energy and protein so that it still is providing growth and development for that calf that's developing inside the mama, and also providing maintenance nutrients for the dry cow. Another component, a very important nutrient for that cow, is water. And so we know that water access is important for setting that dry cow up for success. I'll maybe go into a little more detail a little further along here in the conversation about the specifics about that, but basically we want to have more than one water bowl in a group of dry cows to prevent that protection of that boss cow from keeping others away from the water. They like doing that, finding out, I think it's fun for them really when you have a boss cow and they think it's fun totally. Just keeping all the other cows away from what it is they want to get to. So we know that we want to have enough water access. We want to have enough feed access. So how much bunk space per cow? We know that cows perform better in the next lactation when we give them enough bunk space and provide them enough metabolizable protein. So those are all things that go together, kind of are on my list of things to look at during the dry period to set the cow up for success in the next lactation.
So just to summarize then, Phil, around the nutrition component, because there's others that we're going to talk about, it's really about making sure you have the right diet, you've got water for that cow, and you've got enough bunk space so that everyone can get access to the nutrition.
Yes, the Dairyland Initiative folks, they've got some very clear guidelines as far as the specifics on water access, feed access, and so on. Another one I didn't mention is actually the straw chop length. So you can include a lot of straw in a diet, but if it's not chopped short enough, cows really don't like eating long straw. They prefer eating the short goodies that other forages and nutrients that are in the diet. So we want it chopped short enough so that they can't sort the straw out of the ration.
It's very interesting. Things that you learned. Fun facts for trivia at a later time. So in addition to nutrition, we also have this bucket around comfort and the housing and the environment that the cow is living in. Do you have any suggestions or ideas around the most effective housing strategies for these dry cows to make sure that they're comfortable and stay healthy during this period? Including bedding, I guess, would be the big one.
Yes, there's different strategies for housing dry cows for sure during the dry period. There's, again, I'll refer to the Dairyland Initiative website. They have very clear guidelines there as far as what sets the cow up for success in the next lactation when it comes to housing and cow comfort. We know that we want to give them enough space. So the number in the industry right now is 100 to 150 square feet per cow. And we know that in our Canadian dairy system, the average number of calvings in a month never occurs. There's periods of the year where we have a lot of calvings, and there's periods of the year that we don't have as many calvings. And so when dry cow facilities are created, we want to size them so that it's going to provide that 150 square feet per cow at the time of year when we have the most amount of cows. So we want to capture 90-ish percent of the time that space per cow, regardless of whether we're at a peak season for dry cows or at the low end of the season for a dry number of dry cows. So that's the one piece, is the amount of space. If they're housed in free stalls, we want to have at least one stall per cow. So that's a very simple one as far as what we're, you know, how many stalls to provide for dry cows. And if we have a separate pen for fresh cows, we want to have a little more than one stall per cow. We're going to give those girls even a little more space. As far as bedding goes, typically if they're group housed, straw is a common component here in Canada for bedding. There are other things like soybean straw, oat hulls, there's sand in some facilities. So there are various bedding substances that can be used for bedding. But I'd say long straw or chop straw would be the most common one for housing these individuals.
So that all sounds great, Phil. Is there anything else that a producer should be considering when they're thinking about housing and facilities for these dry cows.
Yes, for sure. Despite what some other folks in other parts of North America may think, we do get heat stress here in Canada. And heat stress is something that can affect dry cows as well. So some recent research from out of Florida showed that cows that are heat stressed compared to dry cows that are not heat stressed during that dry period had different outcomes on the calves that those cows were carrying. So let me explain this a little further. So the calf that's inside the cow, if that cow experiences heat stress, that calf, when it matures to be a milk cow in 2 years' time, that calf actually produces less milk if her mama was heat stressed during the dry period. Doesn't that blow your mind?
Yes. It's amazing how something that happens 2 years previously before the calf is even out in the world can impact production.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
It's some interesting research that was done in Florida. So it just kind of reinforced the fact that we can't forget about dry cows when it comes to cooling. So making sure that we have air movement, the number is 200 feet per minute. We want to have lots of air movement across these cows during that dry period time when we go through periods of heat stress here in Canada. And we call it a thermal neutral zone is the term that's used. Typically, it's about 22 to 23 degrees Celsius with about 75% humidity-ish. But it's in that range where we want to, once it gets above 20 degrees, consider adding some supplemental air movement to those dry cows.
Perfect. So don't forget about them.
No.
Especially in the heat. So we talked a lot about in our previous dry cow management podcast about the social aspect with these cows because they're housed often in a group setting. What can we do to manage that as well to help with setting the cow up for success in the lactation?
Yeah, the social piece has been actually a very important part that's been uncovered by some research. We realize now that the social stressors that cows can experience in leading up to calving have quite an impact on how they're going to perform in the next lactation. So what we've learned, I use the term when I'm presenting to producers, 2 weeks or 2 feet. And what that means is if we move the cow to a different group of animals within 2 weeks of when she's going to calve, it actually changes the outcome very commonly with that calving event. So that stress just around close to when she's actually going to calve commonly creates problems when we make social changes close to that calving event. So the 2 weeks means if you're going to move a cow in the dry period to another group of cows, do it at least 2 weeks before she's going to calve. Another reason why it's 2 weeks is because we don't know when the cow's going to calve. Sometimes they'll calve 4, 5, 6 days before their due date. So if we give them 2 weeks before they're due to make that change, it should cover most of the cows. Then they're going to at least have 7 days before they're going to calve when you make that, after you make that move. The 2 feet thing is just once the cow has started the calving process and there's either a water bag or a feet that are showing, if we make a social change at that point, it's kind of like the process has already started. It's gone beyond the point of no return and you're not going to stop anything. So we call that just-in-time calving. In larger facilities where you have a lot of cows calving constantly and you probably would have a herd person that would be there looking after that pen all the time, they're able to pull those cows out just as they start to calve and move them somewhere else. And that doesn't necessarily have a negative impact on that calving event because the process has already started once you provide that social stress.
So
2 weeks or 2 feet?
Yeah, so 2 weeks, don't move them. And if you see 2 feet, don't move them. Really simple, straight way to think. It.
2 feet, you can move them.
Oh, 2 feet, you can move them.
Two feet, you can move them. So inside that period of 2 weeks before they're due to when the 2 feet are showing, don't move them.
Don't move them.
Yeah.
There you go. So it's a great way to remember it. So you've provided us with a lot of great information so far, Phil. Could you maybe just summarize at a high level, maybe quick bullet points of the information that you shared as for key takeaways?
Yes. So I think I'll start off with the space piece. So we want 150 square feet per cow in the close-up dry cow for sure, 100 square feet per cow in the far off. One cow per stall if it's in free stalls. Greater than one water source per pen. And if it's a water situation where you have a water trough instead of a bowl, we want to have 3 inches of linear space per cow, but still with more than one water source per cow. Metabolizable protein, 1,200 grams. You can take that to the bank. That is an industry standard now. 1,200 grams of metabolizable protein is required per cow per day through the dry period. Social changes, we just talked about that, but 2 weeks or 2 feet. Bunk space, we want to have 30 inches per cow is through the dry period. And from a diet standpoint, we call it Goldilocks. I'll use the word term controlled energy diet. Though that is an approach that has been very successful, consistently successful for dry cows. We want to look at keeping cows cool during the dry period and when there's heat stress. And of course, that production piece at dry off, we want them less than 15 liters of milk on that dry off day leading into the dry period. So I think that's my list. It's not my list necessarily. It's kind of a collaboration of researchers across North America, really, in the last decade. That's kind of summarizes what the current recommendations are.
Yeah, and it sounds like a pretty solid list of things that farmers can use as benchmarks to make this period or to set those cows up for success as they move into lactation. So we talked about all of these different strategies that they could use to help these cows. I'm curious what we could do about monitoring and if intervention needs to happen, because we know the world is not perfect and things can go sideways. So what types of signs or different things that producers should be on the lookout for to help, you know, keep on top of these dry cows during this period?
This isn't going to be an exhaustive list, Heather, but it's a list that I've put together, and I think hopefully some of the listeners will find this useful. Typically, we monitor dry cow performance in the fresh cow period. There's really not a whole lot we can do to monitor dry cows from a productivity standpoint, of course. So we determine the effectiveness of the dry program based on how cows perform in their early lactation. At the very start, for those of you that aren't using Brix refractometers to measure colostrum quality, I think it's a no-brainer in this day and age now with all the research that's been done. Measuring Brix, using the Brix refractometer to measure colostrum quality is just a no-brainer for helping calf health and growth. And why do I bring that up? It's because we know that colostrum quality changes throughout the year and some seasons. If we're measuring colostrum quality with that Brix, it's almost as close to real time as you can get with dry cow performance, because if the number we use in the industry now is 24% Brix. It used to be 22, now it's 24% Brix. We know that if your herd is going along and it's, you know, between 23 and 28% Brix very consistently, and now all of a sudden the last 3 or 4 cows that calve in, they're at 18 or 20. That's an indicator that something's changed in the dry period. So that's one test I think that folks can use to just find out whether things have changed in the dry period. Production and health traits in the fresh cow are the other two things that we measure and monitor. So how many cows get ketosis, monitoring that is important. How many cows are getting milk fever? How many cows are, you know, getting a twisted stomach? We call that a DA, displaced abomasum. All those things can be measured and monitored in herds to determine how successful the dry period was. Because if we end up with higher numbers of cows that are calving in and having those diseases, if it's occurring in the first 2 to 3 weeks after calving, we know that it's something actually that's happened in the dry period more commonly than what's happened in the fresh period. The last piece then probably is production. So we know that by monitoring cows' production at about a month of stage. So 28, we say a 4 week milk in lactonate testing. Other herds that aren't on lactonate can use peak milk performance. We know that peak milk or that 4 week milk drives productivity in the fresh cow. So by achieving really good transition, we end up with getting higher milk yield in that first 4 weeks to 2 months period of time. And we know if we monitor that over time, we can tell when things aren't going as well in the dry period is because the cows aren't peaking or aren't having as high a production in the first 1 to 2 months after the cows calve.
Very good. So really what I've taken away from this discussion all around dry cow management, whether it's drying the cows off or setting her up for success for lactation, is this what I referred to in an earlier episode as a so-called vacation. It really isn't a vacation.
That's right. It's not a vacation for the cow. It's a lot of details that when done appropriately can result in some really good outcomes in fresh cows.
So, and then again, to summarize what you've provided, I think in this episode, there's really three key areas that the producer can focus on. They've got nutrition, they've got housing and the components all around that. And then it's also about monitoring what happens, because it sounds like if you need to make changes, you're going to learn that from when the cow comes in to freshening, and then you can make those changes and to set those cows that are coming into freshening up.
Yeah, and it's sometimes not about changes. It's just about going back and making sure that the ration is being delivered the way it was intended by the nutritionist. So, you know, things change over time, and sometimes if you aren't constantly monitoring the dry cow ration, things can change moisture-wise, ingredient-wise, chop length-wise, that happen slowly over time maybe. And so by monitoring those things in the fresh cow, it basically will allow the producer then to go back to the dry period and say what's changed. And just by looking at various components of it, whether it's, you know, did they crowd them? Did they overcrowd them? Did they have some social changes unexpectedly because of whatever happened on the farm? Or again, the ration, you know, has there something changed within the ration that maybe is causing what they're seeing in the fresh cows?
So we've given our listeners a lot of things to think about, Phil. Is there any final words or final key takeaway that you want to leave the listeners with?
No, I think we've covered a lot of the main topics, and I appreciate all the questions. I think to finish off, I'll just kind of reiterate that dry cows, I don't think should be thought of as being out of sight, out of mind anymore. I think it's a very important part of their lactation cycle. And by ignoring it, it decreases their productivity in the next lactation.
That's a great way to wrap up this podcast episode. So with that, listener, thank you very much for your time. And again, we're going to plug, if you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. And we look forward to you joining us for our next episode.
You've been listening to the Herd Health Podcast. The information shared in this podcast does not replace the advice of a veterinarian. We encourage you to reach out to your veterinarian for more information about the topics discussed. Boehringer Ingelheim cannot recommend the use of products outside of the Canadian product approved labeling. Find more episodes of this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks again for listening.